Hey, and welcome to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast. I'm your host, Mishka Katkoff, and my guest today is Felix Brauberg, a true monetization expert who is really so transparent with his advice that he has received cease and desist from some ad monetization company. But let's not talk about that. Let's talk about what me and Felix are discussing in this podcast. We talk about brand ads and games, Amazon and Apple entering the ads business, the efficacy of different ad formats, how a game can double their ad revenue, the effect of privacy changes on in-ad monetization, and what the ad monetization will look like in the near future when all the dust settles. So in-app ads are either important or absolutely crucial, depending on the type of a genre that your game is. And I think this is fascinating. I think even if your business is not relying on in-app ads, this is truly a topic that you need to understand. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Felix Robin. Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast. This is my podcasting voice, Felix. How do you like it?
It's gorgeous.
So my guest today is Felix Brauberg. Felix is a mobile ad revenue expert and a fellow podcaster for 2.5 Gamers. If you haven't listened to their podcast, it's fantastic. So Felix, you've spent years working with biggest game and app developers to help them increase their ad revenue by designing ad placement, negotiating with ad networks, and improving mediation ad stacks. You worked on mobile DSPs and ad networks, so you know exactly how the demand side works. And you've probably gone through hundreds of mistakes, failures, and complicated situations, as have I. And that has made you into the beautiful man that you are today, which is not like me. So Felix, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, man. You know, compliments get you anywhere. So thank you for that warm introduction.
So I wanted to get you on the podcast because I want to understand in-app ads and where we are today. And I think I had a couple of stats in my presentation that I was I've been presenting to a few people, and I think these are from, I believe these stats are from Unity. So there's two charts. One is why in-app ads matters, and it shows all the genres in the game, in mobile games, from action adventure to trivia word, puzzle racing, role-playing simulation, you name it. And it shows the distribution of in-app ad revenue percentage and in-app purchase revenue percentage. And the lowest percentage is in RPGs, and even RPG games make 20% of all their revenue through ads. And then you go, of course, to the 95% from hyper-casual, the 80% for Word, 70% for board games, et cetera, et cetera. So this kind of shows that no matter what kind of a genre, no matter how core it is, it still makes a fifth of its revenue through in-app ads. And the second chart that I've had in my presentation was the sort of anti-notion to the thinking that ads may create a worse experience or inferior user experience for gamers. In this chart, it shows the reward video ad completion rate by genre again. And there you can see that the typical genres that we consider the casual ones, the hyper casuals and so forth, have a very high completion rate of 80% and up. But then we go to the traditional core genres like RPGs, like strategy, etc., and there the ad completion rate is actually over 90%. So clearly users are enjoying the ads, or at least enjoying what the ads give them. And then the final chart that I had was when you ask core gamers, console gamers, PC gamers, mobile gamers, do they want to get rid of product placements? And majority of them, far larger side than those who say that they want to keep the ads there, and it's a far bigger percentage than those who say that they want to get rid of ads. So this is kind of my background of why I think in-app ad revenue is valid. So did I get this right, Felix?
Yeah, I mean, you still got to take it with a bit of salt, right? Mm-hmm. Because I always say that in-app ads are still kind of the last bastion of the Wild West. How I've described it earlier is, if you've ever played Red Dead Redemption 2, mm-hmm. you know it's set right before the end of the cowboy age. That's kind of the age we're in right now with in-app advertising. So these stats that you read out, they're fine and dandy, but they're still made by Unity, which has yes. an interest in getting people to use more ads. So if we just look at the charts, first of all, completion rate, it's a bit deceptive for them to publish this, I think, like that, because to get out of rewarded ads, you actually have to close the app because there's no X button until the end of it. So, you know, that requires a lot. Like, you really have to be quite angry. So it's quite hard, but
I've done it.
Yeah, yeah. It's still good indications of like the overall, like sentiment. Generally, people like rewarded ads, and it's kind of touted as this silver bullet for the fact that if you have the best game in the world, you can might get 3-5% of people that make an IAP. The rest of the people that you have, or the gamers that you have, it's just costs, right? Server costs.
Yeah.
So making them see rewarded ads is kind of on paper the silver bullet. So in practice, usually the biggest issues I find with rewarded ads is kind of the content of rewarded ads, because it's kind of a race to the bottom right now to get low CPIs with shocking content. Everyone's seen like the atrocious CP, like the content that you sometimes get. And then also the end cards have been getting worse, right? So what a lot of people don't know is you need to kind of manage everything, right? And you can, but it just takes a lot of effort. And if you do all these things, and we can get into other parts and best mm-hmm. practices later as well, you're able to get quite a good ad experience and reduce complaints, and then everyone's happy. And I've actually worked with some clients where you remove rewarded ads and people get pissed off. And that's a good sign. That's a good litmus test, yeah. right? But also going back to what you said on RPG. So I worked on Legendary when I was at Network. And I helped increase the ad revenue overall from 12% to 18%.
Wow.
And that was one of the things where like all the developers were really not happy about it. But like in the end, we managed to do it incrementally without reducing any of the IAPs. So I know it can be done for role-playing games. And if it can be done for role-playing games, it can certainly be done, I think, for pretty much every genre. It's just about taking the time and kind of understanding it and kind of understanding the regular pitfalls.
Yeah, yeah. That's valid points. Yes, and thanks for not debunking, but adding a little bit of a color to these, you know, ad platform based surveys. But I'm curious to understand what happened in 23, like during this year. What has been, and more particularly, like what has been the privacy change on in-app ads?
So the privacy change on in-app ads, it's I guess you're referring to the Google CMP and the loss of the IDFA, which was a bit earlier. Is it that kind of what you're getting at?
Or, yes, yeah. IDFA especially on iOS.
Yeah, so the IDFA, everyone's been touting as the ad apocalypse, mm-hmm. which it kind of is, right? Because if you lose the ability to target users, all ads essentially become branding ads. And in theory, the eCPM should then fall quite significantly because you can't do highly targeted ads. That hasn't happened yet because iOS is still allowing or kind of like turning a blind eye to something mm-hmm. called fingerprinting. What is fingerprinting? Fingerprinting is essentially when you use statistic methods to kind of deduce and do targeting anyway, but it's not individual targeting. Funny story is that we know exactly that all networks are doing fingerprinting. Even Apple is saying it's not allowed, but everyone is doing it. And there's proof on this because essentially when Apple first announced that they were going to get rid of the IDFA mm-hmm. and basically no fingerprinting was allowed, eCPMs on iOS dropped pretty much overnight by about 50%. You could see it across the board. And all the networks dropped and it was pandemonium. It was like everyone's like, yeah, here we go. Here's what everything what Chris has been talking about. This is we're all going to die. And then the interesting thing started happening, like, networks started, like, the eCPM started improving, and the delta between IDFA users that have consented and that didn't basically went down from about 60% down to 18% about 3 weeks after. So what happened then? All networks essentially turned on fingerprinting, and that hasn't changed yet. So right now we're in this kind of really big transitionary phase where a lot of things are happening within app advertising. So it's a very big moment of change. A lot of things are happening. So IDFA is one. So no one really knows when Apple is going to get rid and start of actually like enforcing fingerprinting, like to get rid of fingerprinting. And that will have a huge effect on the CPMs on Apple, on iOS. So no one knows when this is coming, but the second they start enforcing it, it's not going to be great for eCPMs on iOS. Mm-hmm. Personally, my theory when this will happen, and this is pure speculation, right? Because, you know, it's down to five people who decide this probably inside of Apple. And, you know, I don't even know who they are, right? But, you know, I would love to take them out for dinner, you know, bribe them with good food and good brandy, and then you could find out, right? So if you look at it, I think from like a game theory standpoint, so the App Store right now for Apple is responsible for 10% of their overall revenues. And all of that revenue comes from IAPs, right? And Apple have their own way of doing UA, right? In a targeted way, which is Apple Search Ads, right? Problem with Apple Search Ads is three placements, so you can't really scale as a gaming company. I've never heard of a gaming company being able to spend more than $4,000 or $5,000 a day. Mm-hmm. And you know, for like a Take-Two or anything like that, that, you know, if you can't spend at least $100,000 a day on a platform, it's pretty much irrelevant and it's not worth your time. So that's an issue, right? So I don't think personally that Apple will remove this fingerprinting until they have sorted that issue out for Apple Search Ads. It's a bit of a going against the controversy, but I don't think they will shoot themselves in the foot, because essentially then no one can do UA on Apple to find these high value users who make all these IAPs. So I don't think that's going to get killed until Apple Search Ads either makes an audience network, which makes sense because they've been advocating for or hiring for roles for a DSP, which is kind of the key component what you need when you're starting in an audience network. So that's what I'm thinking to watch out for. So I don't think fingerprinting and the whole IDFA thing is going to get killed until Apple have launched their audience network.
Got it. And then Apple would be in a pretty dandy place, because they have Apple Arcade where you can get all your games, and then they have their own audience network, their own advertising tech, which is the search ads. If you want to play the free-to-play game, give us the money and continue playing.
Well, they're looking at, you know, Unity's revenues, AppLovin's revenues, Liftoff's revenue, saying like, hey, gee, that's a lot of spend.
Yeah.
Would be a shame if something bad happened to it, right?
Yeah, a lot of spend that we don't get a lick of. That's the problem.
Exactly. I mean, you know, buy some Apple shares right there. I think they're going to pull it off. It's a closed ecosystem, so.
I always buy Apple shares. They're the real gangsters in the, of course.
Stonks only go up.
Yes. by the way, I wanted to get some basic terms right. What is a DSP?
Demand side platform. So what we can talk about. So I've worked in two DSPs and an ad network. So I know how the sausage is made. So DSPs is a demand side platform that buys everything programmatically. I worked for two called Remerch and Addictive. They're retargeting DSPs. So they bought mostly banner inventory, but then there's also something called networks. And they have their own demand. So when you go to AppLovin and you buy AppLovin, like campaigns through AppLovin, that's through their direct inventory. DSPs, they buy all their inventory from an SSP or a supply side platform, and that's where they buy all their inventory. So it's DSPs and networks are the two main demand sources that you get when you hook up ads into your mobile game or mobile app.
Understood, kinda. So yeah. when I open up my Unity ads to run through my game, let's say I'll take Unity ads and I'll take the AppLovin's ads.
It's more complicated. So like I said, right? So it's in-app advertising. It's a bit like reading in the Middle Ages. You either know it or you don't, and no one really teaches you it because it's not that many people that do it. But it's way more complicated. So for example, if you work with Iron Source, let's say for example,
aka Unity.
Unity. But Iron Source is the network. So let's say, Mishka, you have created another game and you want to buy some users for that game, and you have decided, let's go to Iron Source. Let's buy some users.
Of course, Iron Source all the way.
iOS, they're quite good. So yeah, and then why not?
No, I'm not. Let's get Luna Labs for our creatives, and
right,
we're good.
So you got your Luna Labs creatives, and then you move to Iron Source, and you put in your credit card details, and you're buying users, right? So I then have the app. I do the ad monetization. I see the impressions come in my app or game, and then I'm getting users. It looks like Iron Source, right? But to ensure that they get a lot of fill, like what you also see is, so typically if you're seeing $100, let's say, a day from Iron Source, maybe 40 to 30% of that comes from Iron Source directly, because they can also resell inventory because they have a direct link with a publisher, or publishers where you call an app or game that shows ads. So what they can also do is use their piping to sell that to third parties. And that's what you see in the AdApps.txt file, which you need to list when you start having ad revenue. So it's not only Iron Source demand directly that you're getting when you plug in Iron Source, it's also their third-party demand, which is a list of exchanges, DSPs, like a whole myriad of different places. So everything is very complicated. It gets really complicated quite quickly, but... Yeah, the fundamentals are simple, but the practice is a bit difficult.
So for a layman listening to this, don't worry about DSP. What you need to worry about is you set eCPM. And the way, CPM is cost per 1,000 impression, cost per mil. And CPM is important because when you divide CPM by IPM, IPM being installs per 1,000 impression, you essentially get your CPI, which is the cost per install. And that is one of the most important metrics in your game. And CPM, the way I understood, is basically how expensive or cheap it is to advertise towards the audience that you're looking for on a specific platform. And then IPM, installs per 1,000 impression, means how cool your creative is, how well it hits with the target audience. And so when you divide that sum of how expensive it is to advertise to what is your knockout percentage of how many of 1,000 impression actually installs it, you get a lower CPI the higher the IPM is. I understand that. What is an eCPM? So effective CPM, right?
So effective cost per mille. Let's just run through like the basic terms of ad monetization, because eCPM gets by far the most attention, and it's not the most important metric by a long shot. So usually you can tell if someone understands and knows what ad monetization is, depending on how much or little they talk about eCPM. So if you're talking to a network and you keep complaining about eCPM, usually the person working at the network will think you don't know anything, right? And the reason for that is you care about ad revenue. Ad revenue is the most important metric. And ad revenue is a component of two things. That's fill and eCPM. And those things together bring you your ad revenue. So I would gladly take a lower eCPM if it meant I got a higher fill and a higher ad revenue. So the metric that we use, our North Star metric, our Lodestar, our Polestar, whatever you want to call it, is
Polestar.
Ad revenue per daily active user, because that's the only metric that you can look at in ad monetization that takes into account the fluctuations of UA. So eCPM is just a mere component of that. And eCPM, like you said, is pretty much what the network is willing to pay for your inventory. So how does a network decide how much they're willing to pay for your inventory? So eCPM is calculated by all networks in different ways. They have different algorithms to do this. But if we're doing it pretty simple roundup of how it works, they take the average of the last 7 days on a bunch of metrics. Google uses about 84 metrics, taking into account like time of day, like even the weather, like where they're doing it. But in principle, like the main metrics that they look at is the amount of unique users, the amount of like times the user has seen an ad before in that day, the install rate on the average like user in that app for the last 7 days. Also, they look at like the click-through rate and a bunch of stuff like that. But that's the main metrics that you look at, and you take the average of that over 7 days. Another big metric that they look at is, did the ad network bring that user to that game or app where they're now seeing it in the bidding? If they did, they usually have that tagged on their server side, so they pay more for it. So let's say you brought a user via AppLovin to your game. AppLovin then sees it on the admin side. They will bid higher for that because they know more about that user. So that average is calculated on the last 7 days, taking into account all those components. Like I said, Google uses 84. I'm sure they, every network uses as many, but those metrics that I listed are the main ones that matter the most.
Got it.
That's how eCPM is calculated.
And basically, you can't really do anything about eCPM as a publisher.
You can. So that's a good question. So the only thing you as a publisher can do is maximize the amount of competition that you have in your waterfalls in your mediation stack. So you need to increase the amount of competition because, as we know, what can we say? Like living in a healthy capitalistic society, you know, like competition moves up the equilibrium, right? So if you think about it as a supply and demand curve, if there's more demand, the equilibrium price moves up, right? So that's all you can do.
Yes. And for listeners, maximizing competition in a waterfall means that waterfall is all these ad providers and how many you have them and how have you set them up. So what comes in first? Is it ironSource? Is it AppLovin? Is it Google Ads? Is it, you know, Meta Ads? What is coming first? Who is coming second, etc.? How you move those things around? And basically, it's like the way I understood it is the order will be based on who pays the highest per ad, and then you move to the next one, the next one, the next one, and it's always lower and lower and lower cost.
Yeah. So we're doing this conversation right now in this transitionary phase, right? Where the waterfall, which was good and stuck around for way too long, is now being phased out, and we're all moving to programmatic header bidding, which means that there's no more waterfall, but we're still, like I said, Red Dead Redemption 2, we're not quite there yet. It's not, you know, out of the cowboy area. So right now we're in this weird space where there's both bidders and placements, and essentially everything is going to move to bidding probably within the next 12 months, so you don't have to move stuff around in the waterfall, but yeah.
Yeah, so it goes from this manual who comes in first to programmatic header bidding, meaning that the ad that pays the most goes first and then second and so forth, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it just automates it. I've been to many ironSource events. They've been talking about programmatic header bidding for the last 3 to 4 years, as I remember. So I thought it's already in place.
Kind of, not really. I mean, it takes time to build these and make them good because placements say that they're a pain in the neck to manage, right? But they do the job quite well. And to get bidders to do a better job takes time and resources, and that's just what's taking time right now.
Hey game devs, are you tired of dealing with complicated payment processes all over the world? Well, Xola's got your back with Xola PayStation. It has a simple, user-friendly interface that makes it easy for players to pay for your games and in-game content however they want. And because the Xola PayStation user interface is adaptive and accessible on smartphones, tablets, and PCs, your players will have a seamless experience no matter their preferred device. Players can save their favorite payment methods for future purchases, and on mobile, even charge purchases directly to their phone carrier bill. On the back end, you can customize your checkout with game-specific integration options like sidebars and iframes, as well as change colors, fonts, and images to make PayStation look and feel like a natural part of your game. Ready to see Xola's PayStation in action? Visit xola.pro/payments-dof or visit the link in this podcast description. The games industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, with global revenues projected to reach a staggering $268 billion by 2025. But with more players than ever connecting across platforms and devices, how can your game stand out against the competition? AppsFlyer has created AppsFlyer for Games to help you unlock your players' true LTV by providing a wealth of game measurement solutions, unique industry insights, and proven best practices. Our dedicated hub is packed with innovative products, industry partnerships, and unrivaled expertise to ensure your game game brand adapts and thrives. We understand that every game is unique, and AppsFlyer's data-driven insights allow us to cater to your specific needs. We know that in today's evolving landscape, staying ahead of the curve is crucial. Trust in AppsFlyer for games to guide you through this exciting journey. We have the tools, the knowledge, and the passion to help you succeed in this ever-expanding landscape. Together, we'll conquer new worlds, both real and fantasy, break records, and create gaming experiences that leave a lasting impact. Get in touch with AppsFlyer for Games today and unleash your game's true potential. AppsFlyer for Games, supercharging the gaming landscape.
And so in terms of ad revenue, ad ARPDAU, has it been increasing or decreasing in 2023?
It's a bit hard to say, right? So I see maybe like 1% with all my clients, like over there, like of the total market's ad revenue. It's hard to say. I think that by this time next year, there probably will decrease because there's a lot of changes happening, right? Because as you move from placements to bidders, essentially what happens is that your app or game moves from being a price setter to a price taker. Because you don't have the same controls as you do on placements, as you do on bidders to kind of keep the price high. Also, as in every industry, there's a lot of hacks that exist. And most of these hacks right now have been around utilizing or gaming kind of a Google systems. And most of these hacks are now being closed. And they're all going to be closed probably by end of January next year. And these hacks have been so profitable that there's probably a lot of companies that have propped up a lot of their margins on this. So I don't think that this time next year's ad ARPDAUs or ECPMs will be anywhere as high.
Oof, that's another warning sign.
What, I mean, it's also tied to macroeconomics, right? You know, if there's more money, more people playing games, more people spending, right? There's more money in advertising. So
more games being launched, more games being scaled. I think that's even more important than the spending part, because when there's less game being launched, especially with hyper casual gone, let's just put it that way, gone, then that means you're not, like, there's not a plethora of different ad monetized games being scaled every week, essentially. So that has probably been a pretty big of a hit on, well, they kind of advertise each other.
I would imagine that these mediation platforms, the two biggest ones right now is Unity Level Play and AppLimit Max, right? Mm-hmm. I should imagine that probably one of their biggest issues probably will be supply in the future. And that's probably one of their biggest issues, not demand.
So supply meaning not enough placements to put the ads
There's not enough ads being shown every day to fill all the demand. That's what I think probably is their main issue. I don't know, but from the outside, that's what I would assume.
We have exactly same issue here on this podcast. So it could be a good issue or could be a bad issue, but I feel their pain on a significantly smaller scale.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. And got it. There's a lot of things you've said. It's very interesting. And what
ads
can
are beautiful? I keep saying it. Like, yeah, not enough people realize.
Well, it's I wouldn't call them beautiful, but it is an important part of the business that is easily overlooked.
Yeah, agree.
Because they have a lot of acronyms, and it's not games, and it's not as big as in-app purchases. So I'm just going to overlook it, even though there are games like I've worked next to games that have been making $500,000 from ad revenue a day. So, and there's no cuts from that. It's $500,000 to your account a day. So
net 30, baby. There we go.
Exactly. There's no web shops over there. You don't need none. Just straight into the veins. That's how it goes.
Exactly.
So talking about that is like, what can a publisher do or developer do to maximize their ad revenue?
Yeah. So two components to that, right? So let's start with the mediation and then we can move on to ad placements, mm-hmm. right? Because there's some general ground rules that you can set. So best practices for mediation is to always use a mediator. The reason for that is the mediation platform is like the marketplace where you hook up all the things, and that's where you can get multiple networks bidding for your inventory. for example, usually in soft launch, what makes the most sense is just using, if you built your game in Unity, just use Unity Ads as the network without a mediation when it's a soft launch. And then you want to focus on metrics like ad viewer rate or impressions per DAU to get that looking strong and good metrics. We'll go into that on the placement side.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you start scaling the game, that's when it makes sense to put in the mediation. So when you put in a mediation with 4 to 6 networks, you will double ad revenue. That's how big this factor is, right? Like, I've seen a double and it always doubles. So yeah, double ad revenue by adding a mediator. Make sure you have a competitive mediation stack. Every network, it has salespeople, right? And they want to sell you and be in their stack. And they're very, like, they're always telling you the good stuff, but proof is in the pudding. So whatever game you're making, go to, let's say, the Apps Flyer index and see the biggest network in your genre. Pick the top 4 and integrate them. That's a good start. Basic rules of mediation is that you want to have a network that is competitive. And what that means in actual terms is you want the network to contribute at least 5 to 10% of overall share or revenue. Otherwise, that network is a complete waste of space in your app and makes your app top heavy because you have to have the SDK in there. Mm-hmm. And they're not bringing that much bottom line. And if they're making less than 5% of ad revenue, they're not contributing to the competitiveness. So just get them out. And that also goes two ways. So you don't want to have a network that earns more than 40% because then they kind of have price setting power in your app. And that's not good either. So you want to keep everyone in between that and then juggle the amount of ad networks that you need based on that metric. So do that. Some networks are still on bidding. Some are on placements. Probably in a year, there'll be less ad monetization people because a lot is more automated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like really good advice for just mediation. Like that's the basics, right? If you get that right, it's really hard to screw up. So there we go. Enjoy, dear listeners. So if we move on to placements, which is a bit more hard, right? That requires a bit more finesse. So there's 3 main types of ad units, and let's go through all of them and mm-hmm. list the pros and cons and kind of some best practices. So the first one, which we've talked the most about, is the golden boy, the one that everyone loves, the rewarded ad, right?
Beautiful. So
rewarded ads get paid the highest ECPMs in the industry because it's opt-in. So a user chooses to watch one. So networks assume that then there's better attention being paid there. So that inventory typically fetches globally anywhere between, depending on the geo mix, $15 to $30 ECPMs, right? So rewarded ads are extremely good because you can get users to watch them and be happy to do so without complaining. And they shouldn't impact retention, right? The only issue with rewarded ads is you need to get them to watch a lot of them. So basic metrics that you say to be decent is 45% on ad viewer rate. That is to say 45% of users watch ads that see the rewarded ad placements. Anything below that means that the rewards are not high enough or the placements are not prevalent enough. And that means they're quite bad. So that's anything below 45%, I would usually say to clients, is unacceptable. Go back and do again. And the other metric that you look at for rewarded videos, impressions per DAU. And you're not really going to make a lot of money from rewarded ads unless you get at least 4 or 5 impressions per DAU. And that's the hard part, to get to 4 or 5 impressions per DAU. Idle games, I've sometimes seen people go as high as 19, and that's insane. Like, it's crazy, right? So the trick is just to get people watching a lot of them, and if you can sort that out, you'll earn a lot of money. So moving on to the interstitial ad placement. So this is the one that probably I'd say users hate the most, and that has the biggest negative impact on retention. But it's also like, if you don't have a very deep economy game, they're probably the best ones to use for you because you force users to watch a 15-second interstitial ad. Typically, these interstitial ads anywhere between 10 to 12 globally, if you're lucky, depending on the geo mix. Thing to watch out for here is like, if you do this too much, you really see a drop in retention. So using this ad format requires a lot of A/B testing. And probably better to do this with segmentation in mind. So segmentation is basically not every user is the same, so show them different amount of ads. This simple form of segmentation is show T2, T3 countries more interstitial placements than T1.
These come into play when you're playing your puzzle game and you've been playing it pretty heavy and you still haven't paid and it's like day 20. Good luck. They're kick your ass with these interstitials.
Exactly, right? Well, they got to make their money somehow, right?
Yeah. And you're like gritting your teeth when you get them. They're so bad that they don't even have the X button anywhere. They just get hung up and you have to go to the app store afterwards. That's what we're talking about when you're a cheap asshole who just plays for
Exactly. Exactly. And then the last but not least, I guess, the survivor, the cockroach of ads, I guess, the banner placement, which is, you know, that little thing at the bottom or top of, you know, apps, games, where you see, you know, small little ads changing a lot. These banner placements get the lowest eCPM because it's just a little text box or picture or whatever. Trick here is, eCPMs can be anywhere from 10 cents up to $1, $1.50 if you're lucky, depending on the geo. But the trick here is to make money on banners, you just need to have the same banner placement visible at all times. So basically, when you switch through screens, just have the same banner thing so you can increase the impressions per minute as much as possible. Big battle being fought here, and kind of one of the reasons I believe at least Max and Level Play have gained so much market share in the last couple of years. So AdMob doesn't let you change the refresh rate, that is to say how often new banners are set. So it's set by default to once every 30 seconds, and Max and Level Play you can go down to 10 seconds. So makes a big difference.
I think banners working apps, like that's the that's probably the reason why they still exist. They might not be great for games, but it's for apps.
I mean, I think they have it on the roadmap that you can change it down. I've heard it being like tossed around.
No,
but these three, ad units are the main ones, and they're the ones that pretty much drive our entire app ecosystem, right? Because if you think about it, like the discoverability on the Google Play and like App Store is terrible, and you can't solve it because there's too many apps and games. So the only way you can solve it is by actually showing advertising in apps or games where other people are. So it's kind of the only way you can solve that issue, I think. So I don't think it can be solved in the App Stores.
Talk to me about playable ads. What's going on there? Like at one point there were the hot stuff. They still seem to be like, you know, the Ebony ads and the Playrix uses a lot of them where you drag the pins and you name it, like all those kind of misleading ads in many ways. Like what's going on with playables?
Playable ads get served in either the interstitial format or the rewarded ad format. From an ad monetization perspective, there is no playable ads per se. There is just rewarded ads and interstitial ads, and they show up in those placements. Like right now, usually what happens is that it's a video for 30 seconds on rewarded ads, and then there's a playable end card or something like that for interstitial. So there's no real distinction from ad monetization's perspective.
Got it. And how about offer walls?
Offer walls is, I wouldn't call it one of the main formats, but it certainly exists as well. If I had to make the list four, that is definitely the fourth widest used format. It's also, what can I say? Like, it's a good ad format if you have a robust in-game economy and that you can, like, plan it out and, you know, balance the economy for it, which usually these companies help you do. Also, secret tip for any listeners, like, eCPMs for offer walls are sometimes as high as, like, $300, right?
Wow.
So it's the highest margin product for most of these networks, meaning that you can usually get a big bonus if you integrate it in your game. But still, like, the best use of offer walls I've ever seen, you get maybe 10 to 12% opt-in, like, of users actually going and using it, right? Plus, the offer walls look usually quite bad.
Yeah.
They're not pretty to look at.
Offer walls is like you do something in another game and you get an offer for the other one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's basically it. Final one, audio ads. That has been on the rise.
Yeah, audio ads is a brand new thing, right? So it's very interesting. It's growing quite a lot. It's still very nascent and it's still very underutilized. And for that reason, it's not getting that much credit, for example. I've seen it used in a lot of apps. I've spoken to a lot of contemporaries like in hyper casual games that use them quite a lot. And I've never heard anyone say that they make up more than 10% of an app's overall revenue or ad revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a very new format. And the fact is that there's no mediation yet for audio ads. Mm-hmm. So yeah, until I think there's a mediation, I don't think that format is completely going to scale. But you never know what happens, right? So yeah, another main type of ad format.
Yeah, it's just with audio ads, like the hypothesis is that you don't have to interrupt player session. They can just listen while they're playing. And so, again, another additional format into what already exists in your ad stack.
Yeah. I mean, you made games, right? Like, what's the percentage of users that play with a mute button on, right?
Depends on the game.
Yeah. But it's usually quite high, right? Like, it's usually over 50%.
It really does depend on the game. Like,
yeah.
Like, let's say you're making a shooter. You have to be a serial killer if you play it without sounds.
That's true, actually. Yeah.
It's like
let's write Jeffrey Dahmer and see what his opinion is, right?
Yeah, it's like, no, I just want to watch killing. Like, I don't care
exactly.
What.
Yeah. Like,
so, yes, they are for sure those type of people, but most would enjoy it actually playing with sounds on. Yeah. Then again, I'm not going to say that you're going to enjoy an ad in the midst of Call of Duty Mobile. That's again a distraction, and you don't want that. So of course it's not for all the settings. But then another thing that you're seeing now more often is that users are listening to something else, a podcast, music, while they're playing, and sort of multitasking that way. And then you can listen to an ad if it gives you, because it just interrupts the podcast that you're listening.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, I think the starting gun really for that industry will be if there's a mediation between them, because there's a couple of competitors.
Yeah.
Like out on the market.
Yeah. AudioMob, Audio, those two are pretty great ones. No?
And who knows, maybe Spotify moves in there as well. Like, that would be a really big thing because they have a lot of demand, right? So let's see what happens. It could be a very interesting space to watch out for.
Yeah. Okay. Well, nice. So we covered it all. Up and comers. Sort of a has-beens and the main ones.
I wanted to talk to you about Heroic Labs. Building a successful game is hard enough without worrying about building your own game tech as well. Heroic Labs provides a comprehensive game stack to help you get your game into market faster and scale beyond the competition. With their Unity game framework Hero, you can cut development and prototyping time in half and quickly add social, economy, and reward systems to grow your game. Satori, the LiveOps platform built specifically for the games industry, lets you run live events, A/B tests, deliver dynamic content to players, and always keep your game growing. Nakama, the industry's leading open source game server, lets you develop locally, providing all social and competitive features for your game, and then seamlessly transition to their Heroic Cloud hosted service and easily scale to meet the largest of audience demands. Find out how to get started at heroiclabs.com. This episode is brought to you by Data AI. Yes, they were called App Annie back in the day, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about how Data AI is the first company to combine consumer and market data with the power of artificial intelligence. And Data AI does this to unlock unique consumer and market insight to accelerate competitive advantages across all digital channels worldwide. What we here at Deconstructor Fund really like is Data AI's Game IQ tool. It's this fantastic market and competitive intelligence tool for mobile gaming that allows publishers to really get to the feature level of a game without doing a full-on deconstruction first. Using this tool, your team can quickly tie features to performance KPIs, which will help you make difficult roadmap decisions. It's also a great tool to identify hidden growth opportunities as you can analyze games on a scale. As you well know, there are hundreds of thousands of gaming apps in the App Store and thousands of new mobile games released each month. And while we don't want you to stop reading and listening to Deconstructor Fun, the fact is we can't cover it all. With Data AI, and especially their Game IQ tool, you'll be able to efficiently determine what features provide a lift, make roadmap decisions based on accurately modeled expected outcomes, discover how competitors lifted performance through feature releases, benchmark performance against your competitors, focus with confidence on the highest potential genre for a new game release. We here at Deconstructor Fun are huge fans of Data AI, so what are you waiting for? Go to Data AI and try the service for free.
One thing that working with ads when working on games has been the transparency. Is that still an issue? Because what I mean by transparency, it felt like this is a black box. This ad SDK is a black box. And it starts making money. And there's salespeople that will tell you that it needs to be in the front of the waterfall. And if you like those salespeople, you might even move it up by a couple of positions, because essentially all these black boxes are the same thing. Is that still the case?
So how do you mean transparency? Like what ads are being shown in your game or app? The auctions is being done?
Yes,
or
like, the auction part. Like how come, like what is the amount of money we are making and who's making what? And like what is really happening inside of this this thing?
Yeah, I mean, no one knows, right? Like what I told you, how is eCPM calculated? Mm-hmm. I know Google has 84 metrics. I know maybe 5 of them. I don't know. How does the auction really work inside of mediation platforms? I can speculate how it's described in like the tech documentation, but I can't check it, right? It's not open source. So I don't know. I'll have to trust people on it. And I don't want to comment on it because I did it once and I got sent to cease and desist. So
I'm
not even opening that. Yeah, like, nope.
And how about like you're making the playable ads? How do you, or not even, yeah, let's say playable ads. Playable ads makes sense. So these are like 15 to max 30 second experiences. Is there a way to optimize those? Like, is there data coming from those? Is like, what should be, like, do we A-B test different things? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of people, like, that's making UA creatives, right? So that's a bit more, right? So usually, I guess, what Matthias say, who's a UA expert, and I'm, you know, the third best UA manager on the 2.5 Gamers podcast. So, like, I maybe don't take my word for it.
Yeah.
But a good hook. Right? Like good 3-4 seconds, something like interesting those first times, and that gets a click, right? You know, I sell the inventory. I don't like, I don't deal with the demand in that way. So yeah.
That was a bad
question.
Asking
the wrong person.
That was a really bad question. I'll take that one. That was an L. I got it. Yes. I got too excited. I was already looking on the other side of the table. So yes, that makes all sense. But in terms of just like optimizing your ad revenue is like, yes, sure, you can look at the placements and you're increasing those from your game side, making sure that users watch and making sure that there's value added when they watch those ads, making sure you're using the right types of ad formats.
You can talk about ad quality. I think that's probably where you want to go next, right? Because that's probably, yeah, that's also one of the hot topics, right? Ad quality.
Yeah.
Because let's think about it. So the industry went through really big changes on the end card side. So I have this theory that I say that the thing that drives the most amount of installs and clicks is not the actual creative itself. It's actually statistically the end card format that these ad networks add on for all the creatives that are run on their network. So I think it was 2.5 years ago, IronSource started making an end card that you had to click 3 times or 4 times to get out of before you actually got out of the rewarded ad. So it was a 30-second rewarded ad, then it was an end card, and you had to click 3 times. And then basically, I don't know what happened, but 3 weeks later, AppLovin had the same kind of style. So it must have really increased like CTRs like by a lot. And now when you're running UA on some of these networks, you know, CTRs are sometimes like 85%, and you're like, what is going on? So now also what's happening is that networks are pushing more and more on rewarded ad units in particular, because that's the highest margin. So now what you're actually seeing is sometimes videos being 60 seconds long with an end card that's, you know, clickable 5 times to get out.
God damn it.
I know, but what a lot of people don't know is, like, if you have scale in ad monetization, like that is to say, like, you're big enough to negotiate, you can negotiate the end cards. So you can say, I don't want to have an end card. So I like the rules in my game are 30 seconds plus 5 second end card, 2 clicks to leave it. That's my rule. Networks will push back saying, yeah, well, you will lose eCPM, but eCPM over retention, not a good deal, right? It's a discussion to be had.
Yeah, and you say 2 clicks to leave it, meaning like there's going to be an X button. You press on that X button and says like, huh, nice press. Try again.
Exactly.
Wow. These are really evil. Like,
I mean, no. Like, it's like, you know, they're publicly listed companies. It's their fiduciary duty to increase their margins, right? But yeah. We work for gaming companies, and it's in our fiduciary duty as well for our shareholders to increase our margins as much as possible. So it's just, yeah. We're locked in this battle between publicly listed companies who are craving profits, and it's kind of just the never-ending battle, right?
Yeah,
and,
forcing players onto the App Store pages. Sounds so vicious.
It's all gravy, right? But the thing is, like I said before, it's like reading in the Middle Ages. As long as you know these things, then you know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Messaging your ad network, being like, hey, please get rid of all 60-second rewarded ad videos and get rid of end cards that are longer than 15 seconds.
Yes.
Thank you. And then if they say no, you go like, nice working with you. We're removing you from the ad stack. And I guarantee you the network will change it. Exactly. And then they will change it.
Okay. Yeah. With the transparency, I was more thinking about like once you start putting games into your ad and it starts making money somehow, like you know, how is it tied to the users you have, how engaged they are? And as you said, actually, there's not a lot of transparency because even you can't say how the eCPM is calculated. So that kind of speaks volumes of
you have the sum, right? So lower eCPM means that your user base is worth less. And, you know, like, for RPG games, like I've sometimes seen in the US, like, you know, $90 CPMs for a rewarded video.
Yeah.
And then for games that are high on organics, you know, eCPM might be $7 for rewarded, right? Because users who are organic are deemed in networks' eyes, you have less data on them, right? So they're usually worth less. So in the world of ad monetization, organics are worth less.
Interesting. It just like in the world of games, organics are worth less.
Yeah.
They are people we don't know anything about.
Exactly.
Very interesting. Okay, let's talk about brands and ads. Well, you said that all the ads are pretty much getting into branded ads, and brand is becoming more
important.
If they
take rid of fingerprinting, right? So that's probably not going to happen on Android, but it will happen on Apple at some point, probably. Mm-hmm. So let's see what happens. But maybe then we'll have, you know, Apple Search ads to save us.
Yes, and Apple Arcade and Netflix games. As long as I've been, so I first started working on ads back in 2013 from the game side. I was doing some of the ad monetization stuff for Heyday. And back then, when we were discussing with the ad colonies of the world, so and the chart boost of the world, see, I'm an OG in this one. the talk was that brands are coming. And ever since, every time I've kind of peeked into the ad monetization world, the same topic has been there. The ads are coming. The Range Rover ads are coming. The you know, the movie ads are coming. Are they still coming, or did they come?
I mean, they come twice a year. They come twice a year, Black Friday and Christmas, and then they leave again. It's just that simple. And let's just be completely honest here. Like, brand ads do exist when the economy is good. Mm-hmm. When the economy is bad, they just leave. But if you think about it, I don't think branding advertising will be ever really massive in the current state on mobile for one big reason. And that is because the main advertising, like ads that you see on like mobile, is other mobile games.
Yeah.
And that's a simple fact because mobile games have higher LTV and trackable users and metrics than branding ads. So if you look at the main spenders on branding ads, it's the fast-moving consumer good companies, agencies, and like big brand companies like car companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like you getting a user for, let's say, a game, I don't know, like, what's a good example?
Raid.
Raid Shadow Legends, right? Let's just say, for argument's sake, their LTV is like, I don't know, $20, right? So they can track that easily. For a car, let's say someone is like advertising an F1, like, you know, pickup truck. Like, there's no tracking that someone's going to go to a dealership and buy that. So they can't track it. It's just money spent. And it's just like, let's hope it worked. Right?
Yeah.
So they're always going to be willing to pay a higher CPI, which leads to a higher eCPM. So they'll win the auction, right? The only time this changes is on Black Friday and during Christmas when shopping goes bananas. Pretty much like when the economy went completely upside down, what was it now, 2 years ago, like branding went completely out. You can see this on the branding focus networks. Like, they used to be semi-decent, and now demand is a big issue for these networks that focus on that. And also, a lot of this branding demand is locked away inside of agencies. And to sell to agencies, you need, you know, what is the saying? Steaks and strippers, right? Like, that's how you sell to agents, you know, like an army of salespeople and relationships. So when I worked at Addictive, they had a branding sales department, right? And how they did sales was very different from performance, right? Performance is all about ROI, ROAS, trackable metrics. And then agency sales is pretty much just who you know, how close friends, like what you can offer. And then, like, I heard stories where, you know, like Mercedes comes and like, hey, we want to spend $50,000 on like branding. Can you get us on these websites? Okay, like, what's your metric? Visibility. And you're like, yeah, okay. Like,
all right. Impressions.
Yeah, like, where do I sign? You know, in performance, that would never happen, right?
Yeah.
So as long as gaming is so big on mobile, which it is, like, I don't think brands have too much of a space to compete just on a pure economic basis.
Mm-hmm. That's very well put and important for understanding. Oh, do you remember the time when King hired their own like ad sales team for Candy Crush? And that was for brands, right? Because they're like, we're not gonna show other ads.
Ads now, right? And they're like, I think they're doing quite well on ads. Like, I don't know how much their ad revenue is, but I'm sure they've realized how dumb that initial decision was.
It was so dumb. It was like it was one of those decisions that you're like a high flying executive, and you feel that the rules of the game do not apply to you. Like, you're flying on a different level. And then when you make these calls.
Give me a couple $1 billion. Maybe I start making really bad calls as well, right? Like,
no,
go on God mode.
It's more like you know, I'm not a normal thing. I'm a being. Anyways, I'm a king. That's how they work. No, shout out to King. They're a smart player. They're definitely...
They're the kings of Match 3, right? Like, undisputed kings. But, you know, ad revenue?
Yeah. There was one silly move, and we're allowed to make fun of it because it was silly then, and it's even funnier now. But So talking about silly, let's talk about Netflix, Amazon. Let's get those guys angry as well. So these content strongholds, they're getting into advertising business. I think Microsoft was talking about getting into advertising business. What's your take on that?
So Amazon is the rising star in the mobile space, right? And they are rising quickly. Like, I wrote a blog post about it 3 or 6 months ago, and how they're entering the industry is super interesting. So right now in the US, they are competing, I would say, with Google on banners in a lot of my ad stacks that I manage. They're either the biggest partner in terms of share revenue or the second biggest in the States. And how they do this is typical, you know, Amazon, their kind of saying is, you know, your margin is my opportunity. And they do the same thing with ads. So what they're doing is they have their e-commerce demand. So what I said before about the iron source, how it works is like you have some iron source direct demand, but then they also have other demand. So how they did this was super clever. So they moved into the market and they were like, we have our first party e-commerce demand. We're only going to accept people on our platform that has a high match rate with where we can find the Amazon ID. So they kept it, or still is, a closed garden, and they slowly onboard advertisers that they know is going to have a high fill rate. So not everyone can join, which is super annoying. But then also what they did, super clever, which is also why they're scaling so much right now, they enabled a program called TAM. What is TAM? Can't remember what it stands for, but TAM sounds good, so I'll just say TAM. So what is TAM? So like I said before, own demand, and then they have a bunch of DSPs that pay a tax, I think it's 18%, to show their inventory through their plumbing. So they can show banners, interstitials, if they pay the price, right? What they allow you to do on Amazon, which is the only company that allows this currently, is that you can go and look at the full list of DSPs, which you can do on any network, that are buying into your inventory. And then you can see if any DSPs are spending a lot. And what Amazon then allows you to do is reach out to that DSP, say, hey, let's do a TAM agreement. If you do a TAMD agreement, that's a direct IO agreement with a DSP, so they pay you. Then Amazon drops that 17% down to a fraction of a cent per impression shown. So you can actually, like, if you go on my website, you can find the article, you can see the example. So basically, there's a picture on that article where I implemented TAM and how, like, pretty much after that, the Amazon revenue, like, quadruples in, like, in, like, half a month. And they're doing this on banners, and now they're moving into rewarded ads and interstitials. They're not quite there yet because they don't have the ability yet to do the end card that, you know, they know in clickable end card, which you have to do now to compete. But they're going to figure it out. Like, they're the quickest growing ad network right now in the States. And yeah, they're going to take it over. They're not take it over, but they're going to be forced to be reckoned with. And it's looking super strong for them.
That sounds good and scary at the same time. Scary for some. How about Netflix and Microsoft?
Don't know. They're not in the mobile space yet, right? Like, they're making mobile games, but they're making premium, right? You probably know more about that than I do.
They're subscription.
I don't even look at that, right? Because they don't have ads in their games. So
yeah. Oh, well, they don't have any monetization in their games. They don't have good games either. But that's a different story. Okay, got it. So let's move on to the last part. What will we be seeing in the in-app ads during the next 2 years? So we understand the 24 you mentioned, that is going to be a tough year for in-app ads. And what's going to happen? Like, what do you see happening in the next 2 years?
So there's a lot of change happening. So I think, like, when always there's a big change, there's always opportunity for new entrants, new movements. If you look at, like, when you said you remember Chartboost and AdColony, what you mentioned, right? Like, their shares of the market were enormous back when you were mentioning that. And right now, fractions of that, right? So this is a fast-moving industry that has the chicken and egg problem, right? All the time. Supply and demand. You got to match supply and demand. If you don't have enough supply, you get less demand. Vice versa, right? So things can change extremely quickly. Right now, AppLovin looks like to be in a very, very strong position, but, you know, not guaranteed they will keep it, but they're pretty good operators, so wouldn't be surprising, right? The biggest things what's happening right now is that Google has a very strong hold on the market as well for in-app advertising, and they've kind of become a kingmaker now to think about it as well for mediation platforms. So currently, now Google are moving to bidding only. No more placements next quarter, Q1 next year, pretty much. But they have only accepted that their bidder will be in 4 mediation platforms. And Google typically makes up 40 to 60% of advertiser revenues, no matter what game you have, right? So what they have essentially become is kingmakers in the mediation business, because you can't have a mediation without Google bidding. So it's 4 mediation platforms that have Google bidding currently. So if they don't open up Google bidding to more, those are the only 4 mediation platforms that will ever exist on mobile.
So that's Unity, AppLovin,
Chartboost, Digital Turbine, and of course their own mediation, AdMob mediation.
Interesting. Chartboost still hanging on.
Yeah. I mean, they have all their demand from being bought by Zynga, right?
So, part of Take Two.
I don't know if they still call it Helium or not, but, you know, I think, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure a lot of their portfolio companies use Helium, right? Or Chartboost. Yeah.
Interesting. And are they going to be, like, how about AR ads?
I don't know. No idea. I don't know.
Just on mobile.
Never thought of it. But what I expect to happen is more consolidation, and more consolidation to keep happening. I'm sure Unity will be bought at some point.
By Microsoft. Microsoft.
Or AppLovin, maybe. I don't know.
No, I have no idea.
But, like, the more consolidation is bad for the ecosystem, because then it's harder to get better deals by pitting networks against each other for negotiation. It's harder, like you said, remember what I said, the most important thing you can do is have competition. And, you know, if it's all 1 or 2 networks, then it's not that much competition anymore, right? So, yeah, more consolidation. Which it could make things harder in the in-app space. But the thing is, I've been doing this for, like, 8 years nearly now, and there's always hacks that come up, and they always appear. So there's always a way to get an edge if you know what you're doing. So now what I said is Google hacks are closing. There's probably another one that's going to be opening at some point, right? So just have to wait and see and figure it out. So very interesting times, but it's going to get harder, I think. And yeah.
Would you say that increase in in-app ad monetization becomes more challenging going forward? increasing your in-app ad.
I mean, you'll still get paid a lot of money for inventory, right? So if you don't have ads in your game, or if your metrics are below the metrics I listed before, you know, there's definitely room for you to grow if you just, you know, pull your sleeves up and do the work, right? Mm-hmm. There's always more way to get it. But like the ones that live and die by ad margins, that's going to get more harder, right? So hyper casual style of games, like that's why they're moving into hybrid, right? Like it's going to get harder to have a pure margin business based on ads alone. Still a killer business to supplement IAPs and de-risk your business, right? But probably only ad revenue driven games is going to be a lot tougher going into the future than it was in the past.
Yeah, especially the like with hyper casual, because acquisition is more expensive, and when acquisition is more expensive and only thing you have to push is in-app ads and you don't have the in-app purchase half of your business, then you're going to be dead.
Man. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things happening. Like I said, there's a lot of changes. We haven't even touched on Skip-Its and like things like that.
Skip-Its.
It's what's like that? Allowing your users to buy tickets that skip rewarded ads, or you can supplement IAPs. So this is a clever way of actually removing the friction. So like, there's always been this discussion: do you show a rewarded ad to paid users or not? Like, dumb discussion to even have. Mm-hmm. Of course you show rewarded ads, but in every IAP you should put Skip-Its. So when someone buys something, you can actually skip the rewarded ads. So then making your in-app currency even more appealing to buy. So dumb discussion to have, Skip-Its. Also kind of what you're seeing now in the latest kind of things is using actual premium currency in the game to skip ads, and basically using the premium currency to skip ads. So a lot of things are happening. I encourage any listener to hear this is play My Perfect Hotel by Say Games to see this, or Mob Control by Voodoo. And then you can see kind of these things at play. But yeah.
Last one, last part of my last question is Digital Market Act. So this is the EU's new ruling that will have a pretty significant effect on at least the app and games business in EU. And as we know from GDPR and some other rulings that have happened in EU, it tends to go global in a relatively short amount of time. And when we talk about Digital Markets Acts, we tend to talk about the effect on the web shops and the fact that you can actually now push towards web shops from your own apps. It's the fact that you can open up your own storefronts or third-party stores and open them up. But the stuff that is not that much discussed is the developers being handed more access to complete data from the platforms or whoever is being deemed as a gatekeeper. Does this have an effect on in-app ad monetization?
Oh my God, yes. And it's been a topic for the last half year. Mm. And it's so boring. Government regulation. It's just so unsexy and so boring. But you have to do it, right?
Yeah.
It's just a sign of where our market has gone, right? So it's consolidated. It's gone so big that now government has stepped in to regulate it. Which, what happens typically when regulation, it gets harder for new entrants to come in because it requires higher costs to appeal with the regulation. So, you know, it's harder to become a new entrant into the market as a result. That's my opinion. All right. But the rules are in place. What are the rules and what will the impacts be? So Google was the first one to announce a couple of months ago that any app developer wanting to have Google demand that is targeted in the EU or the UK will have to send ad requests with a CMP approved string in their bid request. Which means that app developers needs to install a consent management platform that is approved by the IAB in order to still get targeted ads from Google in that geo. So you don't have to do it, but then you won't get targeted ads from that, like from EU and the UK from Google, which pretty much means that you're losing 40 to 60% of your ad revenue in that in those geos. If you don't have any users there, fine, great, don't do the CMP, pain in the ass anyway, right? But most people that have a lot of ad revenue have to comply, and they have to install the CMP. You can either use the Google one, which usually has an opt-in rate, what I see in clients, of like 84%, or you can go with a bunch of vendors. And usually then I can see that, like, what can you say, like, consent rates are like 94%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of development work that you need to do. It doesn't look great. It's annoying to do. Only good news is that you also get Amazon demand because they actually just don't target European users at all right now. So that's a nice carrot for you if you do it. But yeah, it's something you have to do and it's not sexy. And the due date for Google is the 16th of January. And then it's slowly going to get phased out until the end of the quarter, pretty much.
Interesting.
Like I said, there's a lot of things that are happening in the in-app ad space.
Yeah, and whatever happens, whenever it feels like the game has ended, there's always a hack.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it works. Well, yeah. Felix, this was immensely beneficial to my understanding. I will need to listen to this a couple of times, but you have a wealth of knowledge.
And, thank you. It was a pleasure to be on here.
You're a very impressive person. So thank you, Felix. Thank you. Tack så mycket.
My pleasure.
So for folks to connect with Felix, it's felixbroberg.com. We'll put in a link in the podcast description below. And if you need help with your in-app ad monetization, he will fill your demand.
That good one. Very good one.
You can use that tagline.
I will.
On that note, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Thank you, Felix, once again for educating me.
Ciao.
Ciao. Thank you for listening to the whole episode. If you like this podcast, please do leave a comment and share the episode. If you want to access the Deconstructor of Fun community with hundreds of senior games folk, go to our website and apply to the Slack group. And if you want to get notified of all the new content we have coming out every week, do subscribe to the weekly Deconstructor of Fun newsletter. Finally, do remember, we love you guys and we appreciate you guys. Catch you next time.